Welcome to the Mock Stars Podcast. I am Menace, one of your hosts, and I'm here with Flash.
Waiting for the sound effect to end, which I'm not hearing this week.
And it's over.
And we're clear.
We're clear, indeed. Welcome to the number one show on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper. And if you met me at MagicCon, I pitched that 1,000 times. And now, when you hear the episode, it all makes sense. The 23 crisp flavors of Dr. Pepper nourishes the soul. It nourishes the mind. Two consecutive peps will open your neural pathways, the equivalent to the Limitless pill. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so by finding us on YouTube, where we're at 469 subscribers. Nice. You can also support us on all major podcasting platforms, where you can give us a 5-star review, make us look super duper cool, and support us on Patreon, like our official Pepperheads. Click and screen change. For $3 a month, you can become an official Pepperhead. Support the show, have your name turned Dr. Pepper Red on the Discord server. You can also support us at the 2-liter tier, $10 a month, like Definitely Jeremy, Pool Boy Barry, UWP Quirt, and Aaron Becker. We also have the Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead tier for $5 a month. On that tier, you get one free entry into each of our bi-weekly giveaways. In the 2-liter tier, you get two free entries, which will have a giveaway at the end of this week's episode. So stay tuned to the end of the episode to see who wins. You can also support us like Revenlift, hanging out in the Mock Stars Dr. Pepper Lounge with the Tasmanian Devil and Vin Diesel. They showed up together this week. I don't know what's going on. They seem to get along. It's a pretty unique relationship, friendship, that I did not expect. This week, obviously MagicCon happened. It was such an amazing event. Met so many cool people. Like, throughout the course of the show, got to play so many games, and we got a bunch of new cards. Before we talk about some of those new cards from Dragonstorm, I said last week that I was going to reveal the custom cards I specifically made for MagicCon for my brother, who had his puppy pass away a couple weeks back. So, took the time, made some custom cards for him, and because Aether Drift lacked, like, the Start Your Engines Commander deck, it was just a mechanic designed for Standard, I took the time to make a Naya deck, because Naya guy gonna do, and here they are on screen with us on YouTube. I'll read them out loud for everybody on the podcast platforms. We have William, who is my brother, Master of Momentum, is a 2 and a red partner with Polly Spirit of Speed, a 1/5 legendary human with haste and Start Your Engines. When William enters, create a colorless equipment artifact token named Birdie, Polly's favorite toy, with equipped creature gets +1/+0 and has pay 1, tap, unattached Birdie. Birdie deals 1 damage to any target and equip for 1. Additional text. Once during each opponent's turn, whenever an opponent loses life, your speed increases. Wow. Yeah. The Master of Momentum indeed. Someone who can gain speed on each opponent's turn. And now we have Polly, Spirit of Speed. A green and a white partner with William. A *4 legendary dog that says start your engines and max speed. This creature gains vigilance, haste, double strike, trample, lifelink, and protection from instants. Whenever you are dealt 1 or more damage, your speed decreases. This ability triggers only once each turn. Polly's power is equal to your speed. She had all the zoomies, man. She had all the zoomies in the world. So that's what the spirit of the deck was, is that they would go out, like, during the pandemic, I lived with them, and so Polly has a special place in my heart too, but they would always take this the toy, the birdie, out and throw it into the field, and Polly would just zoom, just go. Like, you just like a little train take off. And when she got up to full speed, there was no stopping her. If you got hit the knees, you're going to the hospital. So I wanted to like sort of make a card that was powerful, but not too strong. It sounds like it's really strong. And at, you know, we played this a few times at the tables in Magic Con, and it, like, you get up to max speed really quickly, and then Polly becomes this crazy vigilant haste double strike trample lifelink with protection from instants, which is a lot of text, but you lose speed if you take damage. So it's really hard to maintain that speed and maintain those zoomies, so to speak, without, you know, William on the board. So you can gain speed during opponent's turns, but once you get max speed, Polly becomes this crazy, crazy, super stompy creature that requires a lot of policing. So the tables, once they figured that out, it was hard to choose which creature to remove, right? Because William would gain you speed, but he doesn't do anything really outside of that other than throw the birdie. And then Polly is the payoff, but Polly's also the downside. So if you don't remove Polly, like, then there are chances that, like, throughout the course of opponent's turns, you can reduce that player's speed and then keep Polly from getting to that full zoomy state. And so it balances pretty dang well. Once people figured it out how to like thread the needle on the deck, it was so much fun to play, so much fun to like see all the cards interact with it, like Eidolon of Great Revel, right? Or Rug of Smothering, you know, whenever a player casts a spell, it deals one damage to them. So if they cast spells on their turn, you gain speed. And then, yeah, it was a lot of fun. Regardless, it was just a lot of fun to build, play, and embody of the spirit of such a happy puppy. I really miss Polly.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. So, these are those custom cards I was talking about. If you were lucky enough to see, I think Andrew was somebody we met at Magic Con. Andrew got to see it and play against it, and it was always a threat at the table. It was, yeah. Happy that it worked out and it wasn't too OP. I might be a Magic card designer in secret. This definitely has like got my brain thinking in custom Magic ways now.
Okay.
Yeah. So pretty cool. Pretty cool. We have cards from Dragonstorm. And if you're on YouTube with us, you can see on screen there are only 10. Only 10 new cards revealed to us from Dragonstorm, which is perfect. It's not too many. It kind of gives you an idea of the set. We kind of got a look in some of these like dragon lords that are, you know, either new to the realm or have never been shown to us before. But the big card that everyone is going to be talking about, that everyone is going to want, is Mox Jasper. Flash, did you see this card spoiled?
Yes, I did see this card. I understand that because Mox is in the title, it's going to be a chase card. It's interesting. How do you plan to proc it?
I have no clue yet. I do not know. It's one of those things. It's a legendary donut, which that alone is pretty interesting. Like, over the course of the weekend, I got to play against a Rona deck from Aftermath, maybe. But it's just a 2-mana creature that says tap it, draw a card, discard a card, and then whenever you cast a legendary spell, untap Rona. And so with things like Retraction Helix and Banishing Knack on Rona, you get to cast two donuts infinitely, generating infinite mana, and then you draw your entire library. So this just kind of contributes to strategies like that, that care about storm and, you know, generating some sort of loop. I just don't know any, like, off the top of my head, man, I don't think there are any dragons that make this worthwhile. Like, there aren't any dragons that come down before turn two in my mind.
There are changelings, shapeshifters.
Sure. Changeling outcast, maybe, right?
Yeah.
One of any color and activate only if you control a dragon. So maybe this is a Yuriko card, because Changeling Outcast is kind of like an all-star there.
Okay.
But that's kind of like a weird one of to run, and you don't really want such a low curve. That's the balance. That's a difficult balance in Yuriko.
I mean, honestly, there is maybe there's some mono red potential with Sarkon Dragon Ascendant. Right?
Because like to become a dragon?
Well, no. When Sarkon enters, you may behold a dragon. So you want dragons in play anyway. Mm-hmm. When you do that, it creates a treasure token. There's got to be some way to loop that. And then you're already playing like shapeshifters to have like low value dragons because it's a 2 CMC commander. I don't know.
There's got to be gas. There's got to be gas here somewhere. It's like, when Mox Amber, because that's, I think that's pretty much the last Mox that we saw made way, way back in Dominaria. When that was made, it was super cheap right out the gate, because I don't think we were valuing commanders. We obviously didn't have Rograk back then, didn't have so many things that were low to the ground. And so Mox Amber wasn't seen as like, you had to have a legendary creature, and it can only tap for colors of the creature. So it's, it was, I don't know. It seemed so narrow, but then it turns out that Commander became this incredibly large format, and Mox Amber is now one of the best, you know, mana rocks in all the game. So it, maybe Mox Jasper is one of those cards that you prospectively buy when it cools down. Like right away, everyone's got their hot on it. It's a Mox. Full stop. It's a Mox.
What are pre-orders for it right now?
You know, that is a good question. Maybe TCG Player will tell us. I can't imagine there. Well, that's the thing, is I'm imagining there probably like $20. There are two listed and they want $100 for them.
There we are.
Jesus. Come on. Come on, people. Until the set like actually gets like a formal, I think until it gets like a super formal release window, or like, yeah, has more spoilers, then Card Kingdom will put one up and I'll be able to get some idea. You know, I'm guessing 30 would be what people are valuing it at right now, just off hype alone. And I don't think it's worth that. I don't think it's going to be worth that much, but you can prospectively buy it and hold on to it, and maybe at some point you get that one drop dragon. You know, you get that card that you can reliably hit on turn one or two and then turn this on right away. That's, you know, part of the reason I think like things like even Mox Opal gets cut from time to time, because it just, Metalcraft is not the easiest thing to achieve in all commander decks. And so that's really what you want out of Mox Jasper, is you want to be able to put it into a lot of different decks and have it be active a majority of the time. So that's its weakness. I think we all know that. You know, we have a few new cards. We have a new Gnar set, Jeskai Waymaster, one of each color, blue, red, and white Jeskai. At the beginning of your end step, you may discard your hand. If you do, draw cards equal to the number of spells you've cast this turn. So a cool way to benefit your storm builds. I wonder how that'll be built. That's actually kind of crazy. It kind of reminds me of like Riel, you know, like discard so many cards, draw that many cards. And then, a few other cards. We're not quite sure on a lot of what this means for CEDH. I don't really see any like CEDH cards.
I don't think Narset, Jeskai, Waymaster has legs. I feel like definitely that is something.
Drawing, like putting cards into the graveyard in these colors and then drawing more than one card off of it. Awesome. Like, and it makes you, it's not a like forced ability. It is a May ability. So I think if you're playing like a Jeskai control shell, that this could be the thing that like feeds an Underworld Breach or gets you to it. Like, throw a Lion's Eye Diamond.
Intuition combos are in these colors, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You do have lines here. I guess if you want this at the helm, does it make sense to have this at the helm, or does it make sense to have, a couple of partners at the helm? Mm-hmm.
I could see a glass cannon type version of this that is trying to win turn one end step, or like on someone else's turn, right? After their first turn.
Yeah, like Born Upon the Wind type thing.
Yeah, I mean, because you have a decent, like, there's enough eggs and enough, like, mana rocks and things that you can, and red has, like, rituals. There's enough stuff that you can probably do where you, like, drop your whole hand turn one and then refill it. High probability of cards that enable your combo being in the four or five cards that you draw on that end step, you have the mana to do it. Something happens, step three profit.
Yeah. You sort of go bim bop boom 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 bop bam, and then you discard your hand and draw a ton of cards. And then
it's one of those glass cannon decks where, all right, you're going for it, and even if you get stopped, you have the ability to refill your hands and get back in it.
Sure. Right? Sure, yeah. Like, you can... you're not so punished for spilling your hand out onto the board, where a lot of other decks, if you mull into something or you draw into something, like, your first hand is, like you said, donuts, a way to get Narset out on turn one, or whatever, you're not punished for putting Narset out on turn one. Maybe that's where the gas is, right? It's all gas, no brakes, Narset turn one or bust, and then you draw six cards.
Because at a minimum, if you're playing Narset turn one, that is a land drop and then two other spells. So three spells.
Yeah.
And even if you, let's assume you didn't mulligan and you're starting the game with eight cards in your hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
So land, three spells, you're down to four cards in your hand. Maybe you had to win a counter war or something on the stack to even land your commander, because someone at the table is smart and knows that, like, if you're trying to land Narset turn one, you're going for a win, or you're setting up, like, an incredible card advantage, right?
Well, I could see a turn one offer you can't refuse on your own spell to mm-hmm. boost that storm count, but then give you two treasures so that mm-hmm. So that you can actually have the mana to cast Narset.
Yep, that's a good line. And then, so at that point, you are card draw positive on turn one with Narset in play, right?
Right.
And if you don't like the remaining cards in your hand, guess what? Now you're drawing four or five new cards, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You like, there is, now that we talk about it a little bit, there is that potential where, every turn your goal is to just spill it all out, spill a hand. Your worst enemy is obviously a Deafening Silence or, mm-hmm. Some sort of stacks piece that, Rule of Law. It, like that type of effect is your worst enemy.
Then it's a deck also that doesn't care about burning through cards in hand, So like you're not holding onto your counters for late game. Like you have faith that you're gonna draw new ones and have them. And so you're not letting those stacks pieces land.
Oh man, you'll be crazy. It's just like a chain of vapor to like bounce all your rocks back to your hand and like sack your lands, but then go ahead and drop all your rocks again, like put everything back down, and then go in your end step and just discard nothing and draw 19 cards because you looped things.
Throw Ox of Agonis or whatever in there as a value piece. Cards like that.
Oh, from cast it from graveyard. Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean that actually sounds like a fun build around where you are on the your this edge of your seat the whole time. You're just pushing for value. Out of the other cards that were revealed, Sarkhan has a new mechanic called Behold. Which, look at this dragon I have in my hand or on the field. That's what Behold now means.
So is Behold, I did they haven't explained the mechanics yet, right? Is Behold specifically reveal a dragon? Like, is that what it makes it Behold
I
versus
think
like a different reveal
I
type situation? Or
exactly.
that it also encompasses like cards on the battlefield?
Exactly.
Like if,
So,
okay.
like,
Can is it gonna apply to other creature types?
I think so. So there were
Okay.
those, what, those lands, or I can't remember if those lands that are like if you control or reveal a fairy from your hand or whatever, it could come in untapped. Like, I think you could errata cards that have that type effect to say, behold a fairy, behold a goblin, behold a something like that, right? This is, yeah, just their way, I think, of shortening the amount because they put so many words on Magic cards these days. This is a way for them to shorten 8 words or more into 1 word and have it become a mechanic that we now could use in a deciduous manner. I think that's how they treat it, right? Like trees, where it comes and goes. It is, they use it as needed. So, yeah.
Got it. Is that the nomenclature that they use like
They use, I thought,
perennial and deciduous and things like that?
I thought they use like tree, like the, tree life cycles as a way to describe mechanics. Like, this is an
Do they
evergreen
have mechanics
mechanic.
that are like weeds? Like, is Storm considered a weed mechanic? Like, you
Like,
just want to root it out. You don't
yeah,
want
you
to
already
let
created
it
it.
take hold.
Yeah, you've already created it. It's got roots in the game. It's something you got to keep making. People like it too much. Like Stormscale Scion. Like this new dragon, 6 mana with storm on it. Imagine casting a few spells before casting a 6-drop. You got to be so far in the game, like to get that payoff. Just insane.
Yeah, because it doesn't count for cheating that card into play.
Right. I will say that the new enchantment, Smile at Death, actually looks really good. It's 3/2 white. At the beginning of your upkeep, return up to 2 target creature cards with power 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. Put a +1/+1 counter on each of those abilities. So they took Alesha's ability and then just sort of put it on an enchantment and then made it a little stronger. I think this is a pretty great engine for like later in the game for Mardu sacrifice or even anything in white that is playing some sacrifice loops or milling even. This is yeah, I think this is a really cool card. I it might be my might be sneaky, man. It might be sneaky at the end of the day. We'll see. All right. So Magicon, it happened. Met so many cool people. Jay, Don at LobbyCon at the end. Andrew played with a ton. All the names. Mike, Troy got to play games with Troy finally, and Troy's playgroup. There was a moment I had told the guys I would talk about this, where there was some dishonesty at the table, And I'm telling you, man, I was so upset. There is a quick story from MagicCon. We're playing this game, and I'm playing Helga, and I'm about to drop a Grand Arbiter because I need, like, Blue Farm is right next to me, and they've drawn so many cards off of Rhystic Study, and they're showcasing a Lion's Eye Diamond in the graveyard. So, like, in my mind, I'm thinking, drop the Grand Arbiter. It'll make the loops for Underworld Breach a little bit more difficult, and they have to do a little bit more dancing before they can just go infinite and win the game. So I put Grand Arbiter on the stack, and Troy and his friend go, you know what? Hold on. And then this guy shows me, just stacks his hand up, and he shows me one card, and it's a Force of Will. And he's like, if you do that, I won't be able to play this. Like, I won't be able to interact. And, like, I was like, oh. I was like, okay. And then Troy said, yeah, so here's what I have as well. I want to be able to interact with that. And if you do that, I can't. And then so I said, in my mind, I said, okay, two pieces of interaction to stop the Blue Farm player to give us another chance around the table. So I just basically said, I am revealing this Grand Arbiter to the table. This is in my hand. And instead, I dumped a bunch of mana into a Hullbreaker Horror that on the following turn would allow me to basically set up and win the game. So Hullbreaker Horror lands, goes to the next turn, to Blue Farm player's turn, and they first spell they cast a Grand Abolisher. And I'm like, Force of Will? Are you going to Force of Will that? And he goes, I can't do anything about it. And I'm like, what? And he's like, I never said I had another blue card in hand.
It's like, oh boy.
I was screaming, dude. I was like, you gotta be kidding me here. And I think Troy was holding a Mindbreak Trap. So we didn't know the Grand Abolisher was in their hand, but like I was furious for a second. I was like, you show me the Force of Will and then say that if I play the Grand Arbiter, you won't be able to interact. Which tells me that you can cast that spell. But he said, I didn't lie. I just didn't reveal the whole truth, right? Because regardless of whether or not you did play that, I still wouldn't have been able to cast it. And I just sank my head into my hands, and I was like, that is some selective information giving. Which, and now I will say that the game has changed since I played, you know, probably like 3 dozen or more games over the course of the weekend. Things have changed, and Play to Win specifically has changed them.
In what way?
The last month, maybe a little bit more than a month, they have been talking nonstop on the show about how just revealing a card to an opponent can act as pseudo removal, right? So just like revealing a Force of will stop somebody from doing something, like, I don't want to have to use this on you, right? And then they stop, and then they go, okay, I won't do it, right? That is successful removal. You've now saved your piece, and you've talked them out of pushing forward, right? So a tactic that nearly every table that watches their content was employing at some point or another. So information, as you play in different play groups, like, obviously you get to know your buddies, you get to know how how valuable information is to them and each, like, every individual player, and you get used to their habits. When you're out in the wild like that, you get to see so many different behaviors. And so many, like, but that is one behavior that has become more and more prevalent then it's not something that I like to do, right? Like, when it comes down to it, when something happens, we talk about it as the table and reveal as much information as necessary, but never am I like seeing something happen and I'm thinking about my next step after it happens. I guess my mentality is, don't be mad about something that's already happened. What is your next step forward? And so I don't reveal a ton of information to the table, like when I'm playing. But ever since Play to Win started talking about using revealing cards as pseudo removal, a lot of players do it now. And it's a strategy, that's for sure. But you got to sort of change the way you approach a game. Like Troy was saying, you just got to make them have it. Even if they show it to you, doesn't mean they have it. That's for sure. I learned that the hard way, because like, just because they had force of will does not mean they have force of will. So you got to call them on their bluff, even when they choose to show you information like that. That is why I think Play to Win has changed the landscape quite a bit. They have thousands, hundreds of thousands of viewers. So, where was I going with this again?
You were told that you had to talk about this interaction.
Yeah, I had to. All right. It wasn't the most influential thing that happened all weekend. I will say that I did have a card chase me. A card. A single card. It chased me all con. And Vexing Bauble is the most annoying card in CDH right now.
In what way?
Like, if you mulligan, like, I was cursed all weekend by not having enough land. I would have two lands in my opening hand, and then a ton of like interaction that was either free or, you know, costs, you know, like endurance, like it costs a card out of your hand to play it. So I would keep hands that had a lot of interaction, but I would only have two lands. And so I would just pray that I would draw my third land or whatever and just sort of like keep the game alive. But Vexing Bauble, four games in a row, just straight up nuked me out of the game, where I'd play a land, make my turn one play, and then go to my second turn, play my second land, third turn, no land. Screwed. Like, I had three chances to get a land to keep going, to keep pushing forward. So you got to be able to interact with the table in a meaningful way, which is why I kept some of the hands, because I'm like, I can still interact with, you know, something through a force negation. But in these games, Vexing Bauble was present almost all of the time. And these were players that were just trying to protect, like they were protecting their own business, but they were also not allowing me to interact with the opponents that were, you know, shooting for win conditions and stuff like that.
Sounds like a very Vexing Bauble.
It was incredibly vexing. So that... I think I saw Vexing Bauble. So in the like nearly three dozen games I played, I saw it in at least, I know, eight games right off the top of my head, like that I saw it in, that it just destroyed me. So there's that. Vexing Bauble, very vexing, incredibly good. And well, like I didn't think I would see it be as prevalent in CDH as it is. Like, I thought it would be a piece that turbo decks would use to obviously protect the win, like, but this is something that people are just using as a stacks piece to prevent interaction. It's almost just as valuable as like a defense grid is, like, if not better than defense grid, because you can also remove it due to its own ability and draw a card. So Vexing Bauble, really good right now. Keep playing it. The only reason that I'm upset or vexed by it is because of how effective it was. So, yeah. While I was sitting at MagicCon, a lot of my experience was ruined by one deck in particular. And not just because it was so formidable. It was a deck that we've all been seeing on the horizon. It's very exciting. It pursues windows of opportunity that we have never seen before in CEDH. And so it's something that is sort of taking the world by storm. And that is Hashaton, Scarab's Fist, the new Kinnan, if you want to call it that. It is an Esper commander. Hashaton says, Hashaton, a white and a black. Whenever you discard a creature card, you may pay two and a blue. If you do, create a tap token that's a copy of that card, except it's a 4/4 black zombie. Hashaton is a 1/3 zombie wizard, so wizard is also relevant in that. There are a lot of really good cards you can play in this deck. There are a lot of really unique discard outlets I did not expect, actually, like Ghostly Pilferer, which is a 1 in a blue creature that says you can discard a card. Ghostly Pilferer can't be blocked this turn, so it's a free discard outlet. And on top of that, it says whenever an opponent casts a spell from anywhere other than their hand, you draw a card. So, yeah, you cast a commander, Pilferer is going to see that. You draw, and then they draw a card. You cast something from the graveyard, you go for Underworld Breach. They are going to draw cards off of the entire Underworld Breach like line. So Hashaton has been making appearances in tournaments and not doing super well right now, but I could tell that Magicon was sort of the crucible for a lot of players. Get their reps in, figure out how it works, and just start like basically reducing it to your best options. There are a lot of really great creature cards that pretty much just win the game for you right off the bat, like Hoarding Broodlord just wins the game on resolving a Hashaton trigger. So the card's design in itself is upsetting to me, because eternalizing something would require you to exile it from the graveyard in order to create the 4/4 black zombie, the copy token of it. But this says if you discard it, if you do, you can pay 2 and a blue and create the token. You don't have to exile it from your graveyard. So the card gets even better just by omitting that little bit of text. But it also means you can't really interact with it, because I had a Soul Cauldron on the battlefield in a couple games, and it just, like, exiling the card with the trigger on the stack does nothing. You still get the token copy. It's pretty, pretty freaking gnarly. It's just any card you discard, or any creature you discard. So people are exploring a few things with, like, Leveler, which I don't know if you remember, Flash, but we talked about this, I don't know, maybe 2 months ago. But it was just like, if you have to play Leveler in a deck, it's a bad deck.
Yes, I agree. Having played Leveler myself, that is my opinion.
And I was always fearful of it because, like, you could just, someone could force you to draw a card, and you just lose. The one thing I'm noticing more and more is that, one, players are very knowledgeable of their forced card draw effects. This deck we're looking at, this Hashaton list I have on YouTube, actually has too many. I feel like it has too many forced draw effects. Like, it has Archivist of Ogma, Ledger Shredder, Esper Sentinel. Like, too many cards that make that opponent draw a card. Like, they're even playing Notion Thief. So if you Leveler and someone would draw an additional card while you have a Notion Thief out, you'll lose, you know? So that is another thing that you have to be conscious of when you play Leveler. How many forced card draw effects are you playing yourself? And then how many exist out in the world that can make you lose the game too? So Hashaton, over the course of the weekend, I didn't see a lot of what is going on in this list here on YouTube. What I saw was a lot of Bone Miser, and oh man, once the Bone Miser came down, spin away, keep spinning the wheel, man. Because every time you discard a card, you get a benefit. If it's a land, you get 2 black mana. If it's a non-land, you get... or if it's a non-land permanent like card, you get to draw a card. If it's a non-creature or whatever, it's like some other... I can't remember exactly, but it's just crazy that not everyone is playing that. It is a bit of a lightning rod once it comes down in this deck. But ultimately, Hashatan does the Kinnan thing. It is 2 mana, comes down very early, if not turn 1, and then on turn 2, you pray that they don't have it. Because, like I was saying, a Hoarding Broodlord is all you need to send this deck through the Stratosphere. So, this deck is evolving. That's really the point of why I wanted to talk about it, is because it is growing. People are figuring out the lines. While people are trying to figure it out in tournament, there are so many people practicing behind the scenes to give this deck a shot in their own unique way. There's so many creatures out there. Like I saw like some primordial 7-drop, 5 and 2 white that said when it enters the battlefield, exile a creature for each opponent, exile a creature they control. Like, boom. Mass removal. While that was like more of a casual card, it did make me aware of like the versatility that this deck can have. Like people are playing Nezahal so that you can draw cards, pretty much discard and then put this onto the battlefield when someone is going to present some sort of like crazy loop of casting non-creature spells, and then you just draw a ton of cards. Elishnorn exists in this list. Khan Sphinx, like all things that are beneficial for you to put out onto the battlefield as a larger or as a 4/4 zombie, like Esper Sentinel later in the game coming down as a 4/4 pretty much makes that draw a guarantee, because you no one's going to pay 4 for that. We know that from Mystic Remora. The suite of interaction is also really great in Esper. I think this is like, this is where Kinnan struggles, where Kinnan has to hit creatures off spinning it. Like, spinning the Kinnan, you have to hit something that either slows the game or makes it harder for your opponents to interact, like Void Winnower or like Wandering Archaic is a really great thing to see when you're spinning the wheel. But in this, you just have all of this interaction built into the list. So it's in your hand. You're ready to go pretty much any time. And getting your commander out early, super beneficial. Like, you're always like Fierce Guardianship is going to be active and alive very early in the game. Esper is not usually in my wheelhouse, but when you can cheat out big fat creatures like this, it kind of piques my interest a little bit. There's also some really cool like Tortured Existence, which is a 1 black mana enchantment that says you can pay a black mana, choose and discard a creature card, then return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand. So notably, Hashatan does not exile the card from the graveyard. So you discard a creature card, you get that Hashatan trigger, choose to pay it or not, you get another creature back to your hand, pay another black mana, discard the thing you actually want, get the token, bada bang, bada boom. It could be a Broodlord line, you know? So there's so many things. People are finding lines with Palancron. Paragon Drake is also another thing that if you see it discarded to the or like and the trigger goes on the stack, there's likely a loop attached to it. These are creatures that are known to have combos just stapled to them in some sort of way, or allow you to keep rolling the dice, so to speak. It's like rolling sevens at the casino, right? You just, hey, keep rolling sevens and everything's good. That's what Hashatan's doing with cards that allow you to untap your lands. There's also a really unique line with Angel's Grace, because this is, like I was saying, a commander that pursues windows in very unique ways. Like, the split second mechanic is kind of crazy, but we have the ability here to basically circumvent that, where people can't interact. They can't put anything on the stack while While the split second is on the stack, you can do some pretty cool things with Lion's Eye Diamond, because Lion's Eye Diamond is a mana ability. It doesn't actually interact with the stack, so you discard your hand. Usually it has something like Palancron in it, and then the trigger, because it's a triggered ability, Hashtan's ability goes on the stack. So your opponents can't even activate Baseju. They can't activate, they can't channel any lands. Odawara's out the window as long as Split Second is on the stack. So Angel's Grace, and then while Angel's Grace is still on the stack, you Lion's Eye Diamond, and then you get all of these triggers from Hashtan. You choose which ones you want to go for, and then you start your loop. And before anybody can even interact, before the Angel's Grace even resolves that says you can't win the game either, you just, yeah, and that's when you end the game. You win the game through some sort of infinite loop that, yeah, craziness. The deck is good. I don't know if you can tell by all the lines, all the things I've already talked about so far, but I've seen cards I would never see again come up, like Archfiend of Ifnir is really good in this.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, discard a card, put a -1 counter on each creature your opponents control. Becomes crazy. Like, it's just a wicked control shell at that point. You can't put anything on the battlefield because discard at instant speed is so relevant. I had no idea how they were keeping their hand full the entire time. But when you play like something like Lord of Change, which is a weird card from Warhammer, it's a flying ward 4 that says when it enters the battlefield, draw 3 cards. So, but it's like a 6 drop. So you're discarding that so that you can put it on the field for 3, draw 3 cards, and have a 4/4 flyer with 4. So potentially creating copies of that as well. But all things like copy effects, like it makes me wonder why Phyrexian Metamorph is not in more lists, or makes me wonder why, you know, Clever Impersonator is not on more lists for, you know, for Hashtan, because it's another way to cheat in something at instant speed to become a copy of another non-land permanent, or to become a copy of Phyrexian Metamorph I get and stuff like that, because you do not get the cast trigger from the one ring, but you do still get a one ring, you know, at instant speed for one less mana than you would have already spent. So to be seen yet what this deck's ceiling is. It's very, it's incredibly popular right now. I think I played 6 games against Hashtan in a CDH environment over the course of the weekend. So I'm excited to see where it goes. In a perfect world, it can reduce the number of Kinnan players out there, because Kinnan is the bane of my existence. But it's just another scary version of Kinnan. I don't know. It is what it is. It exists now. It's not getting banned anytime soon. Flash, have you thought about this deck, or has it haunted your nightmares?
I have not.
No? Yeah, it's...
Besides you telling me that it's hot right now?
Yeah. The artwork is sick. Has some of the sickest artwork. And it's cheap. It's so cheap. Go out and get it while you can. It's a $5 borderless foil. You want to know something else I learned at MagicCon?
What's that?
Those gold border Aether Drift cards, they look awful. They do not look good. I can say that with all the vendors who had them all out on the display case. You had everybody, you know, like out of all the wacky artworks that have been put out in secret layers and stuff like that, they had like pretty much every vendor had one box or one display case that was just these gold art cards. And wow, they're an eyesore. I will say that. Not to drag the design team down or visual design team down for Wizards of the Coast, but they're tough to look at. They're a little tough to look at. All right, Flash. Any final thoughts? Are you excited? Are you? We don't have any plans yet, and this is kind of putting you on the spot. Vegas?
When is Vegas Con this year?
It's June.
June-ish. Yeah. Yeah, I'll probably be there. I can't imagine that I wouldn't.
Yeah, I'm Googling it right now so we can get a better idea. Here we go. The Magic Con, June 20th through the 22nd. Magic Con Las Vegas. Sounds like the Mock Stars are making an appearance. So we'll see you all there, hopefully. Fingers crossed. It's really exciting. I want to be at every one of these things. Like, I want to take tokens, I want to take stickers. I want to get one more card signed by Dan Frazier so that I can talk
to him.
That's
not a lot to ask, just one more card.
Man, if Wizards of the Coast, you're listening to this, you got to put a limit on how many cards people can take into the line with them. Oh my God. The amount of people who would like take, so like everyone wanted Dan Frazier's signature. And, you know, he hasn't been to a million events as of late. So at Magic Con, it's like one of the more highly sought after lines to get into. Day or like Friday, Saturday, line was impossible to get in. It was so long as soon as the con opened. And then I got in on Sunday. And I only had one card that I wanted signed. But then I would just watch people drop 20 cards in front of him and just be like, can you sign all these, please? And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, it's crazy. Like, Wizards of the Coast, please put a 3-card limit and then allow people to get back in line. Put a 3-card limit and then just get back in line. Get those lines moving. Like, I know that that's more transactions, potentially more credit card transactions for the artists, and that costs money. And they're probably not happy about that. But so if you have so many credit card transactions, you actually get a lot of those fees waived. So, I don't know. It just make people's time less wasted at your conventions, where like people only want to get one card signed, right? I stood in line for an hour and 15 minutes, and there were only, I don't know, 15 people ahead of me. And it was just, it was insane how many cards were being signed by each person. And then one guy ahead of me was just like, a friend came up to that person and tried to hand them like 10 more cards and was just like, can you get these signed for me? And everyone was like, are you?
Boo this man.
Yeah. Boo this man. And he was like, nah, I've already got like 3 other friends' cards with me. And I wanted to boo that guy. It's like, man, come on. Come on right now. But then I had a friend come up to me and be like, hey, can you get this signed? I asked for permission from everybody. I said, hey, guys, I have one card and he just wants to get one card signed. Is that okay? And I gave everybody in line a Dr. Pepper. And people were chill with it. So Dr. Pepper pays off, pays the bills. Remember that. This is the number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper. We also talk about Don Cheadle sometimes.
Yeah, we talked about the Dr. Pepper presence at MagicCon Chicago.
We have
like,
not.
That's pretty important, I feel like.
Yeah, I did have 3 12 packs on day one. And by the end of Sunday, I was giving out the last few Dr. Peppers that I had. So it wasn't really a mountain. I put the mountain on the table once, and then someone was like, why do you have so much Dr. Pepper? It's making it so that other players can't play at this table. And I was like, okay, I'll put it on the floor. Sad. But yeah, it was like I had a ton of them. I was carrying them around all day. Artist Alley, I was giving him, I hit up Tyler Jacobson. He got 3 Dr. Peppers this weekend. As the greatest fantasy artist in the world, he deserves them. And he loves Dr. Pepper. If you know Tyler Jacobson, or if you would like his artwork, if you want to be in his good graces, bring him some Dr. Pepper. When you see him, bring him a can. He loves the stuff. Dr. Pepper Zero is what he buys at home. So make him feel at home. Get him a can of Dr. Zero. Any final thoughts, Flash?
On Dr. Pepper?
Yeah.
It's a great beverage. Just thank you for sponsoring us.
We're looking forward to that offer. Very much so.
Yeah, that's what I meant to say.
Yes. All right, well, we're going to get out of here. This has been the Mock Stars Podcast, the number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so by finding us on YouTube, where you can like, subscribe, and ring that bell for more notifications. 469 subscribers. Nice. I just wanted to keep saying that. Nice.
Yeah, 400 is a very funny number.
Yeah. Yep. And you can also support us on all major podcasting platforms by leaving us a 5-star review. If you love the show, make sure you share it with your friends as well. Every single opportunity to get out at MagicCon, the audience grows a little bit more. It's so much fun to get out there and just like to meet everybody. To everyone I played with, I had such a great time. If I didn't mention you, if I didn't say your name, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. But I had a great time, regardless. And I'm looking forward to all the future cons. Vegas, maybe Atlanta this year. Who knows? It's a little far in the future yet. Haven't planned that far. If you'd like to support the show via Patreon, you can do so by becoming an official Pepperhead. Have your name turned Dr. Pepper Red on the Discord server. Support the show. You can also support us at the Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead tier for $5 a month, like maybe Anthony, KB, Mono Greg, Jacob Hibbard, Tommy Cypher, K Mr. K, and Will Rule. So thank you all for your support. At the $5 tier, you get one entry into each of our bi-weekly giveaways. And you can support us at the 2-liter tier for $10 a month. Get two entries and early access to our Card of the Week videos. Oh, gosh. I didn't think of a Card of the Week. What should we... Oh, gosh. Oh, no. All right. I'm just going to plug it in right here.
Vexing Bauble.
And that's the Card of the Week. You can also just hit us up on Discord. You can join the Discord server. If you want to play some games, jam there, send a message, get your hands on some tokens. Once I get another order in, you guys love the tokens so much. I was handing them out at all day, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the con. I ran out of treasure tokens, so definitely have to get some more of those. But yeah, those are all the ways you can support the show. All right, we're getting out of here. Thank you so much. This has been the Mock Stars Podcast. We'll catch you later. Peace.
Peace. Bye.
All right, everyone. If you made it this far in the episode, congratulations. It's the bi-weekly giveaway. And this week, we're giving away the event exclusive playmat from MagicCon Chicago, an Aether Drift playmat. So let's go ahead and shuffle it up 3 times. 2 and 3. And if you're with us on YouTube, you can actually get a sneak preview into what our new visual setup will be moving forward. Woo! I will now. We're going to go ahead, spin the wheel, see who wins this week's Bi-Wiki giveaway. And it's Ravenlift! Congratulations, Ravenlift. You have won yourself an event-exclusive MagicCon Chicago Aether Drift playmat. I will get that out. I'll be in touch, and we'll get that out in the mail for you as soon as possible. Thank you all for your support and participating in these bi-weekly giveaways. It means so much. We truly do appreciate it. Make sure you stick around. Stay tuned for more episodes of the Mock Stars Podcast as they come to you every single Friday. So thank you all again for your support, and we'll see you next time. Peace.